Today is Thursday, June 24th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden sets his sight on gun control.
These merchants of death are breaking the law for profit. They're selling guns that are killing innocent people. It's wrong. It's unacceptable. As the Attorney General said, we're going to crack down on those gun dealers.
Plus, UN condemns state-sponsored violence in Iran.
The Secretary General's report indicates the government is remaining firm and applying harsher punitive controls.
Also, ballot counting continues in Ethiopia amid violence. Our top story today is in the U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged to go after illegal gun dealers and boost federal funding and support for local law enforcement as homicide rates have spiked in large cities. He said the government also will help states employ more police officers using funds already approved to help the economy recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. Analysts say gun violence has assumed epidemic proportions in the country.
These merchants of death are breaking the law for profit. They're selling guns that are killing innocent people. It's wrong. It's unacceptable. As the Attorney General said, we're going to crack down on those gun dealers and the violent criminals they knowingly arm. Today, the department is announcing, as I just did, a major crackdown on stem the flow of guns used to commit violent crimes. It's zero tolerance for gun dealers who willfully violate key existing laws and regulations. Let me repeat, zero tolerance. If you willfully sell a gun to someone who's prohibited from possessing it, if you willfully fail to run a background check, if you willfully falsify a record, if you willfully fail to cooperate with the tracing requests or inspections, my message to you is this: we'll find you, and we will seek your license to sell guns. We'll make sure you can't sell death and mayhem on our streets. It's an outrage. It has to end, and we'll end it. As part of our strategy, the Justice Department is creating five new strike forces to crack down illegal gun trafficking and the carters supplying weapons to cities like New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and the Bay Area. With these strike forces, local and federal law enforcement and prosecutors are going to be able to better coordinate the prosecution of illegal gun trafficking across city and state lines. So, illegal guns sold from the back door of a gun shop in Virginia don't end up in a murder scene in Baltimore. We have an opportunity to come together now as Democrats and Republicans, as fellow Americans, to fulfill the first responsibility of government on our democracy, to keep each other safe.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. An aide to Iran's outgoing president says Washington has agreed to reverse over 1,000 Trump-era sanctions. U.S. officials have not confirmed the reports. Matthew Laratonda of Reuters has more.
The Iranian government is saying that Washington has agreed to lift all sanctions on Iran's oil and shipping industries just days after the talks to revive the 2015 nuclear deal adjourned in Vienna. The statement reportedly came from the chief of staff to President Hassan Rouhani, now in his last weeks in office, and is said to be a reversal of over 1,000 sanctions imposed by the Trump administration. Iran's state-run media say it also includes the lifting of sanctions on some high-ranking officials. The White House, Western, and Iranian officials have all recently said that the talks were far from over. However, some Iranian officials have suggested that they would prefer to nail down negotiations before its new incoming president, hardliner Ibrahim Raisi, takes office in order to give him a clean slate. In related news, U.S. authorities say they've taken down 36 websites linked to Iran for violating sanctions, many associated with disinformation campaigns or violent groups, including the English language media outlet Press TV. The websites were replaced with the FBI logo and statements from the Department of Justice.
Now you can see we have breaking news coming.
A Press TV anchor here, as it happened on Tuesday. Press TV is owned by the Iranian government. It and several others were back up within hours, however, at new web addresses.
Regional news networks, including Press TV.
That's Matthew Laratonda of Reuters. A new report by the United Nations Secretary General on the human rights situation in Iran condemns the widespread use of punitive measures and state-sponsored violence to keep the population in line. Michelle Bachelet, the world body's High Commissioner for Human Rights, presented a report to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The report finds Iran's slumping economy, deteriorating living standards, and increased social and political strains arising from the COVID-19 pandemic are fueling public discontent and protests. Despite these problems, the report says authorities show no willingness to adopt meaningful reforms or react compassionately to situations arising from this crisis. The Secretary General's report indicates the government is remaining firm and applying harsher punitive controls. UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet notes, for example, that Iran continues the widespread use of the death penalty for acts that under international law do not constitute most serious crimes.
In violation of human rights law, death sentences are also frequently imposed based on forced confessions extracted through torture or after serious violations of the right to a fair trial. In 2020, at least 267 people, including 9 women, were executed. But only one of these executions were announced.
So far this year, she says at least 95 people have been executed, 6 of them women. She adds more than 80 children are on death row, with at least 4 at risk of imminent execution. The report notes ethnic, religious, and other minorities are at particular risk of abuse, forced disappearances, and executions. Bachelet says the report documents the inappropriate use of force by security agents against protesters and bystanders, as well as the intimidation, arbitrary detention, and criminal prosecution of human rights defenders, lawyers, and journalists. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Officials are tallying the ballots in Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's first electoral contest after more than 3 years in office amid reports of new violence in the northern Tigray region. VOA's Heather Murdoch has more from Addis Ababa.
The conflict in Tigray has displaced about 2 million people and forced tens of thousands to flee the country. In recent days, amid reports of new violence, the African Union is investigating allegations of mass murders and rapes. Aid organizations say parts of the region have already slipped into famine, and millions of people are in danger of starvation. On Monday, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said, there is no hunger in Tigray, adding,
there's a problem in Tigray, and the government is capable of fixing that.
But even in Addis Ababa, where there is no war and the city is rapidly developing, candidates say the next government has plenty to do.
The problems you have are economical, which is inflation is 2 digits inflation, unemployment. We have unemployed youth, and we should strive to at least systematically and continuously create job opportunities. So for this, we need peace and tranquility in the country.
Prime Minister Abiy is expected to retain his seat after results are announced. Voters say what they want most from their government are lower prices, peace, and security. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The Delta COVID-19 variant, first identified in India, has spread quickly around the world and is now hitting Indonesia. Southeast Asia's largest country now has more than 2 million confirmed cases. VOA's Gita Pamatasari reports.
Hospital bed quickly filled up in this Indonesian capital. Jakarta is one of the 3 cities in this country that has seen a spike of new COVID-19 cases since the Muslim holiday Eid al-Fitri in mid-May. The spread of the Delta variant first detected in India is the likely cause.
Beberapa daerah seperti
some areas such as Kudus and DKI Jakarta and also in Bangkalan, it has been confirmed that the Delta variant or B16172 or also known as the variant from India dominates.
Varian dari India mendominasi.
Indonesia has reached 2 million total confirmed cases.
To help slow the spread,
President Joko Widodo wants to speed up vaccination to 1 million doses per day come July. But progress has been slow. The country is going to miss an earlier target of 70 million citizens vaccinated by July. Data from the COVID-19 task force from mid-June show fewer than 12 million people in Indonesia have been fully vaccinated. Among those 60 and older, fewer than one in five has been vaccinated, according to official data.
There are a few hurdles we're facing. First, not all elderly citizens are willing to be vaccinated. Turns out it's not easy to get them vaccinated. They may be worried about the side effects and comorbidities.
In June, the government made vaccination eligible for everyone 18 and older. A new target, 7.5 million people in Jakarta vaccinated by the end of August, which they say is enough to achieve herd immunity in the nation capital. For now, the nationwide restriction of public activities remain in place, but there's no plan for stricter lockdown orders like those in neighboring Malaysia. Aharyan Utama, VOA News.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration said on Wednesday it will add a warning about rare cases of heart inflammation in adolescents and young adults to fact sheets for the Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines. But the CDC said the benefits still greatly outweigh the risks. Jillian Kitchener of Reuters reports.
The FDA on Wednesday said it will add a warning about rare cases of heart inflammation in teens and young adults to fact sheets for the Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines, but that the benefits greatly outweigh the risks and are still recommending the vaccine for all Americans over 12 years old. CDC advisory groups found the risk of the heart condition in adolescents and young adults is likely linked to the mRNA vaccines, and that the risk is notably higher after the second dose and in males. Doctors and hospitals have been warned by the CDC to watch for symptoms of myocarditis or pericarditis, and the FDA warning will further raise awareness.
These rates appear higher in males than females.
But in a Wednesday meeting, advisors said the benefits of the mRNA vaccines appeared to clearly outweigh the risk. In a separate report, the CDC said the patients with heart inflammation following vaccination generally recover from the symptoms and do well. The cases are extremely rare. Data from the CDC suggests heart inflammation is seen at a rate of about 13 cases per million in the 3 weeks after the second shot in 12 to 39-year-olds. HHS, along with leading U.S. doctors groups and public health officials, issued a statement urging all eligible Americans to still get vaccinated.
That's Jillian Kitchener of Reuters. Hong Kong's Apple Daily has printed its last edition as national security law charges leveled against its founder and executives forced the paper out of business. VOA's Jessica Jarriott has details.
The end of an era. Hong Kong's Apple Daily printed its last edition Wednesday night as supporters held up smartphone lights in solidarity outside the newspaper's offices. The closure comes 1 week after security forces raided Apple Daily's offices, froze company assets, and arrested five executives under the national security law. With founder Jimmy Lai already in jail, the fate of his pro-democracy paper is chilling Hong Kong's once vibrant media scene, journalists say.
We will worry about reporting subjects that are associated with the national security law, such as topics related to sanctions and independence. This will create a chilling effect. People may avoid reporting this sort of news.
Hong Kong authorities accuse Apple Daily of using journalism to endanger national security. And they dismiss Washington's criticism that the charges against Apple Daily are politically motivated.
And don't try to accuse the Hong Kong authorities for using the national security law as a tool to suppress the media or to stifle the freedom of expression. All those accusations made by the US government, I'm afraid, are wrong.
Apple Daily says its style of journalism has been a thorn in the side for Hong Kong, resulting in years of pressure.
However, the legal system in Hong Kong had always protected us up until 2020, July 1st. The national security law is an incredible burden and actually a block for press freedom.
While Apple Daily's closure is described as a dark day for media, in the digital there is still some hope, says a political analyst.
But does it mean there's no free press in Hong Kong? Not necessarily. It's 2021 and it's a digital age. There are a lot of online news media emerging, such as Stan News and Citizen News, and there are other popular news accounts on Facebook, on Twitter.
But with one less newspaper in Hong Kong and journalists wary of crossing the national security law's red lines, many see a grim future for press freedom in the region. Jessica Jarre, VOA News.
A former Philippine president, Benigno Aquino, the son of two of the Southeast Asian country's democracy icons, died in a Manila area hospital on Thursday of renal failure as a result of diabetes, his family said. International edition, Steve Miller spoke with journalist Stanley Guijete in the Philippines about Aquino.
We all know that Noynoy Aquino undergone several dialysis and even heart operations months before this time. So there are so many complications in his health conditions. That's why it led to the complications of his kidney leading to the disease. So it was really tough day. It was really sad day for all the supporters of Aquino. We all know that he's the 15th president from 2010 to 2016. The current president, Duterte, expressed sympathy to the Aquino siblings, although we all know that there are polarities.
And I understand you had the opportunity to speak to some people who were gathered around trying to pay their respects to the former president.
When I interviewed some of the people outside the hospital, they were surprised, and many still visited Noynoy Aquino. They attempted if they will see the remains of Aquino. And since the security during that time, or early this morning, was so tight, so they haven't got the chance to see Noynoy Aquino. But still, regardless of the color, regardless of the political beliefs and ideologies, the Filipinos right now were shocked and was saddened by what happened to the former president.
That's reporter Stanley Guijete in Quezon City in the Philippines, speaking with my colleague Steve Miller. This is the Voice of America. A senior Russian diplomat warns Russia will be ready to fire to protect its borders. The statement from the deputy foreign minister came Thursday after a Black Sea incident in which a British destroyer sailed near Crimea in an area that Russia claims as its territorial waters. Russia said one of its ships fired warning shots and a plane dropped bombs Wednesday in the path of British destroyer Defender to drive it away from the area near Sevastopol. The British government, however, denies its ship was fired on. Several European Union leaders are affirming that discrimination against the LGBTQ community must not be tolerated. It is setting the scene for a heated EU summit later Thursday over new legislations in Hungary that would ban portraying or promoting content about LGBT issues to children. An Israeli Defense Ministry body released plans for 31 West Bank settlement projects on Wednesday, the first such move under the country's new government. The civil administration approved plans that include a shopping center, a special needs school, and a number of infrastructure projects and zoning changes in existing West Bank settlements, Israel media reported. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Australia has been urged to agree to an immediate emergency evacuation of Afghans who worked for its military during the long conflict in Afghanistan. Australia, whose involvement began in October 2001, has said it is fast-tracking visas for former interpreters. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Campaigners this week released a list of the names of nine Afghans who worked for Australia during the conflict in Afghanistan and were allegedly murdered as traitors by the Taliban in reprisal attacks. This is despite a recent announcement the Taliban made, pledging they wouldn't retaliate against Afghans who worked with foreign groups. Islamic militants are attempting to retake control of Afghanistan as foreign forces leave. Interpreters played a key role during the conflict. Campaigners have said about 1,000 Afghans are still going through Australia's visa process, but they say it's taking too long. Stuart McCarthy, an ex-Australian soldier who was deployed to Afghanistan twice, has been an advocate for former Afghan interpreters and other staff. He says he believes the closure last month of the Australian embassy in Kabul has made it much harder for the interpreters to leave Afghanistan safely. He submitted an emergency evacuation plan to the Australian government. McCarthy told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation the rescue mission should be undertaken without delay.
It could still be conducted very rapidly, very effectively, and in my view, it would be a very good way for us to end our 20-year-long military commitment to Afghanistan. And in my view now, if we're not making these sort of decisions today or tomorrow, essentially what we'll be doing is allowing these civilians to be slaughtered by the Taliban, and our own government, including our Prime Minister, would have blood on their hands.
Senior foreign affairs officials in Canberra have conceded that locals who worked with the Australian military in Afghanistan are in danger. Australia's Immigration Minister Alex Hawke has tried to reassure Afghan interpreters waiting for a protection visa. They were being given the highest priority in the humanitarian program. Hawke said 180 visas had been issued since April, but he wouldn't reveal how many applications were still being assessed because of operational and security reasons. Independent Senator Jackie Lambie told the Federal Senate that it was absolutely shameful to leave the interpreters without protection. The world, she said, is watching how we treat our mates. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
That's Soraya Lee of Reuters. What do the Pentagon, the FBI, and other U.S. intelligence agencies know about UFOs? The report due this week is expected to draw a few conclusions and raise many questions, especially about U.S. adversaries. Matt Dibble reports.
A much-anticipated report on UFOs is due to arrive in the U.S. Congress this week. Over 120 cases of what the military calls unidentified aerial phenomena are included, but no determination has yet been made about the origins of the mysterious craft, say officials briefed on the report and interviewed by the New York Times. The U.S. government's scrutiny of the phenomenon was prompted by U.S. Navy recordings showing unknown objects maneuvering in extraordinary ways. Luis Elizondo led the Pentagon's UFO investigation beginning in 2008 and was interviewed by the Associated Press.
These reports that were being taken by trained observers and some of America's most sophisticated platforms, these were real indeed objects, and they were in our controlled airspace, and we did not know what they were.
Lawmakers from both political parties say it is time to determine whether the objects pose a threat to the U.S. The report is expected to focus on whether the craft belonged to a U.S. adversary. Could Russia or China have developed what appears to be highly advanced technology? This is unlikely, says Marek von Rennenkampf, a defense analyst during the Obama administration, who spoke with VOA via Skype.
China, we know, is struggling with basic jet engine technology. China relies on espionage to secure much of its advanced defense technology. Russia has a defense budget that is a fraction of the United States.
Given the limited information released so far, it's too soon to say whether the phenomena are a result of one nation's technological advances, say some experts. Todd Harrison is an aerospace analyst with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
There could be explanations that don't require a great leap in technological capability. It's just something that we weren't expecting and something that we haven't seen before. If it ends up being something from China or Russia or another country, what it really would indicate is a failure of imagination on the part of our intelligence agencies.
The report has been 6 months in the making, incorporating evidence available for many years. Indications are that intelligence officials are still not ready to reveal any firm conclusions. While there is reportedly no evidence of extraterrestrials, they have not been ruled out either. Marek von Rennenkampf.
From what I've heard from folks in the government, that there's not enough time to compile a coherent report on this issue. We don't have the analysis that we really need. This is a long-term project. I think it's a right step.
Adding to the intrigue, China has its own program studying UFOs, according to a recent South China Morning Post article in which a researcher names the U.S. as a possible source of the objects. Matt Dibble for VOA News.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofori in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.